We're going to be covering today Mark chapter 1, verses 40 through 45. Before we get over there and read those, while I certainly would encourage you to turn to those words, we're still in this first chapter. In the first chapter of Mark, he does a good job of laying out for us where he's going. Here is this story, this accounting of Jesus Christ as the Christ and as the Son of God. And we've been through some of the early things that went on with that, his baptism, the testimony of the Father and of the Holy Spirit and of John through prophecy and so on. We get through his temptation. He called Andrew and Simon, Peter, and James and John, cast out some demons, heals Peter's mother-in-law. And this is and the whole community of Capernaum, which is where he was at that time, winds up at his doorstep for people to be healed. And when we read in Luke, it says, and he healed them all. So his healing was not held back. It was freely given. And then I want to read for you as kind of a lead into our verses today, verses 38 and 39, because this is where he came to after doing many healings and casting out demons and traveling around. He said to them, verse 38, let us go somewhere else to the towns nearby so that I may preach there, for that's what I came for. So he's doing all these healings. It establishes his sovereignty over the physical world. He cast out the demons, establishing his sovereignty over the spiritual realm. And so now he says, what I'm here for isn't to heal and cast out demons, but it's to preach. So let's get on with it. And he went into their synagogues throughout all Galilee, preaching and casting out demons. So we add in this preaching element with a little more, or some significantly more, emphasis. And so then we come to another event that Mark gives us information on today in verses 40 through 45. So I would welcome somebody reading those verses for us. You got to go ahead.
And there came a leper to him, beseeching him and kneeling down unto him, and said to him, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. Yes, thou canst. And Jesus had compassion and put forth his hand and touched him and said to him, I will be thou clean. And as soon as he had spoken, immediately the leper from him, and he was made clean. And after he had given him a straight commandment, he sent him away forthwith, and said unto him, see thou say nothing to any man, but get thee hence, and show thyself to the priest, and offer for thy cleansing those things which Moses commanded, for a testimony unto them. But when he departed, he began to tell many things, and to publish the matter, so that Jesus could no more openly enter into the city, but was out in the desert places. And they came to him from every quarter.
All right, so we have an event here today that reshapes the style of ministry that Jesus is doing. Maybe not style, but location of ministry and his pattern of going to the synagogues in the cities. But let's go back up and take a good look at this event. Verse 40 starts, and a leper came to Jesus. Now, if we look at the issue of leprosy, it was a big deal in the Old Testament, and it was a big deal in the time of the New Testament, and it's an issue that lingers yet today in certain ways, and we'll take a look at that. But Let's start out with looking at this. How about Luke chapter 4, verse 27? Luke 4, 27.
And there were many lepers in Israel in the time of the prophet Elijah, and none of them was cleansed, but only Naaman the Syrian?
Yeah, Nahum.
Naaman the Syrian.
Yes. And so that's Jesus talking when he's in his home area And he brings this up as an issue. But so here is leprosy being a big deal in Israel, and basic cleansing hasn't happened. Now, you'll see the word cleansing all throughout a discussion on leprosy. It's interesting that the language is such that when they talk about other maladies, physical maladies, and healing occurs, that Jesus does, they say, and he was healed. But with leprosy, they always talk about, they use the term cleansing. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is the nature of what leprosy is and was, because it is a disease that makes you unclean in the eyes of the church, of the people, and so on. There's a level of contagion that's there. So physically, it's not a clean disease. But the other reason you would say cleansing is the effects of leprosy, you might be, quote, healed, but unless Jesus does it and does a miracle, like when he puts the ear back on that Peter cut off at the garden, unless he does that kind of a miracle, when people, quote, recover from leprosy, there's a lot of issues that don't go away. You might not have active leprosy. It's a little bit like we say with cancer and remission sometimes. You know, the effects of the cancer may remain. You may have given up to surgery portions of your body. You may have had other things happen, and you may say, well, I'm healed, and in a sense you are, but in another sense, there may be, for some people, some effects that happen during the treatment that continue on. And so when we talk about leprosy and being cleansed, people were cleansed. Now, Jesus mentioned that in the Old Testament time, Naaman was the only one, but there was a prescriptive way to determine that a person was past being unclean due to leprosy. And so we need to talk about what leprosy is. The word comes from lepros, which simply means scaly. We're talking about primarily the skin here. So leprosy was a scaly skin disease or malady. And there are a number of things that might be included in this general category of leprosy that we wouldn't think of including in our thoughts and talks about it today. Even some pretty common things like psoriasis and eczema could be considered in the leprosy family in the way it was defined by the people of the Old Testament and up into the New Testament period. But when they talk about, but those things wouldn't necessarily make you unclean. The kind of leprosy that would make you unclean, it would be more what we would call today, I've got it in here, I wasn't going to say it now, but I'll look ahead. Hansen's disease is what really lines up most closely with leprosy of its day. And it does come from a bacteria. Okay? So what do we know about leprosy? What are some things that you have heard of that might fit in? Yes. Oh, I thought you were. Anybody?
Contagious.
Contagious?
Isolation. They isolate.
They would isolate people for it?
Your digits will be numb and one may fall off.
Yeah. Having loss of sensation, particularly in the area of pain, and touch and that kind of a thing is part of what happens with leprosy. The primary attack of the bacteria is in the nerves. And so it's going to damage your nerves, and there are results from that. Just kind of going on ahead with this, the determination of leprosy was a job of the priests. And the priests were kind of the guardians for the safety of the people and the health-wise. A lot of the health issues went to the priests, and they would determine whether you had that health issue or not. Go over to Leviticus chapter 13. We're going to look at verses 45 and 46. A lot of the chapter 13 and 14 of Leviticus is geared all around the disease of leprosy. We're going to look at just a small part of it. And what we're going to look at here, if you looked at chapter 13 and 14, you would see the prescription given by God himself through Moses that would prescribe how to determine if a person was unclean due to leprosy. And there was quite a process of doing that. And we're going to talk about some of the symptoms in a minute. What we're going to talk about here is what the results were if you were determined to be unclean, what had to happen. So let's read Leviticus 13, 45 and 46. So if you're a leper, a person who's been determined by the priests to be infected with leprosy, the unclean variety, you have a tough life ahead of you because they're going to tear your clothes for you. Your clothes might come in as nice, good clothes, and when you leave the determination, you're going to be in tattered rags on purpose. So when people see somebody coming in tattered rags, their attention goes up. If you're a male, you're going to cover your mustache. That one I don't understand at all, but it's there. And the other thing that you're going to do is everywhere you go, if you see anybody around, you're going to yell out, unclean, unclean, so that people would know to stay away from you. And this is much more than just disease control. What else is it? Well, it's ostracizing, but if somebody were to inadvertently come in physical contact with you, what happened to them?
Become unclean.
They become unclean. Now they fall under a whole ceremonial set of things they need to do and a time period of their own ostracization to get cleaned up and to get free from this uncleanness that has been transferred to them. So these people are going to be living outside the camp by themselves. I mean, if you read that, you could certainly interpret it that if the two of you are lepers, you're still not going to be able to share an apartment somewhere and some companionship. You're on your own, live by themselves.
But weren't there leper colonies?
There were, but I don't know if when they, maybe their sleeping quarters were all separate. I don't know, Ted. You're just beyond what I have information about. But this was a nasty social result. And a piece of it is limiting the spread of the disease, because there is some potential of spread, and it basically comes through inhalation. So it doesn't come through touch so much. It's not as contagious as you might think, but there is a contagion. I mean, it can be transferred a little bit. I mean, when you have somebody in the family and you're in the cold, are you all going to get it? Maybe, maybe not. But are there things you can do to limit that quite a bit? Sure. And some of those things could have probably easily taken care of the contagion issue if they had wanted to, if that was the only issue. But this disease, as it progresses, isn't very nice. It starts with a white or a whitish-pink patch of skin, usually somewhere in the facial area, forehead, brow, open brow and nose, ear, somewhere. And one of the effects that happens before too long is the eyebrows and eyelashes will go away. So that was a uh-oh kind of a warning sign. But the big thing was that whitish, maybe pinkish skin. And that's when at that point you're headed to the priests. And then the priests are going to start going through their evaluation. And we're not going to go into all their evaluation, but spongy, tumorous swelling on the body occurs, and this thing can spread from head to toe. It becomes systemic and will eventually even affect internal organs, bones, and bone marrow. And if it gets to that point, it can begin to affect blood quality and blood quantity, and it just is a really, really nasty disease. For 90% of the people affected, it limits itself to the extremities, your head area, your hands, your feet. And if it really gets into those areas deeply enough, you can have things like blood flow cut off to a finger or something and lose a finger and that kind of a thing. But most of the time, it stays with just this anesthetic quality of no pain. And you think, well, how bad can a disease be if the effect of the disease is it gets rid of pain? Well, the problem with it is you lose your self-protective side is one thing. One example is there was a, and I don't know how far back this goes, but a medical person who was infected themselves a little bit, they were trying to open a lock that was rusty, and this younger, I took it as a teenager the way it sounds, came and says, well, let me try it, and he just opens it right up, and he's looking, goes, well, how did he do that? Well, he didn't have any, this kid was infected, didn't have any feeling in his hands, and he had pushed so hard on opening that he opened his fingers up to the bone, but he didn't feel it. He didn't even know he'd hurt himself. And so one of the things that they talk about with leprosy is you get to rubbing things. You don't have any feeling. So what's your natural? If you got a hand that goes numb, what do? You know, you kind of go, you know, I'd like to feel something in my hand. So you kind of rub it back to life, right? They would rub their skin right off.
Oh, wow.
Rubbing your own nose off because your nose doesn't have any feeling. It's kind of like itching, you know. That was not uncommon. So people literally wear out their limbs because they don't know they're doing damage is kind of what would happen. About 10 to 30 years in modern days we can treat it. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But in this era and up through treatment, 10 to 30 years, death from lack of resistance to other diseases is usually what happens. Somewhere in that range, things would progress to the bone or whatever, and you would lose the ability to fight off other things. So you didn't usually die from this, but something that came along behind it. I already talked about being transmitted through inhaling the bacteria. So, you know, the clothes in that would be something you'd want to be careful to be around that they had. Interestingly enough, they believe that they believe that this really had its origin in the Egyptian area because that's the earliest area they found evidence of it. And where they found evidence of it was in the mummies. Some Egyptian mummies, they've been able to determine that the bacteria that causes this was present in those mummies. Now, there's more to that story, I suppose. I didn't go hunt for it to say, well, was it still alive? Was it still alive bacteria? I mean, was it that resilient or what? I don't know. We won't go read it, but over in 2 Chronicles 26, there was a king Uzziah that God became very put out with. And so what was his punishment? He struck him with leprosy. And as a result, here's the king. He has to live outside the camp, can't have contact. I mean, for a king who's at the top of the social pyramid, this was pretty devastating, not just for the physical consequences, but also the social ones. Rabbis said that the closest that a person with leprosy should be to uninfected people or to clean people was either 6 foot or up to 150 foot. Well, what made the difference? Which way the wind was blowing. If you were downwind, you wanted to be 150 foot away. If you were upwind, 6 foot was fine. So that's what the rabbis would tell people about. So what distance is okay? Yes, sir.
How did a priest pronounce somebody unclean without becoming unclean themselves?
Well, there's a lot of observation. So in the observation process, I didn't see anywhere where the priest would touch them.
Right, but if they're so worried about airborne contamination that somebody has
they weren't thinking airborne contamination. In terms of the strictness of being clean and unclean religiously, it was touching or not touching.
Okay.
In terms of health issues, I mean, I don't know where the rabbis came up with this, and I don't even know what era it was they said this. This might have been 500 years ago. It might have been the time of Christ. I don't know when the rabbis said this, but they're just, this is one of the little facts. I said, well, the rabbis have said, okay, well, which rabbis, what time? I didn't get that. But I just found it interesting that they were considering wind direction. Yes, sir.
Now, did the priests think that the origin of this uncleanness came from something that the person did, like not following the law? Was that why they were there?
Typically. Now, I mean, it's not spelled out in the Old Testament period that all disease comes from this, but there was a generalization that if you're having troubles in life, think of Job. If you're having troubles in life, well, what did you do to earn these troubles? And, of course, a sane person that understands sin and God would say, how are any of us alive? We've all earned instant, you're done, we'll move on, kind of a response from God. And so it's bad thinking, but yes, that would be an underlying thought in most cases, I think, from what we've seen of what we can learn from the Old Testament. So let's talk about today a little bit. In the year 2000, there were almost a million cases reported. They believe that it would probably, worldwide, they believe that's probably double that because of unreported cases. But in 1982, they came up with drugs that basically will take care of stopping the disease. And that's probably the right way of saying it. If it's diagnosed, they can stop it. Now, if by the time they diagnose it, you've lost your nose or something, well, your nose isn't going to grow back, or whatever the case might be. So there might be some pretty serious consequences, but today we have pretty good treatment like we do for many bacterial kinds of infections. And Dr. Paul Brand, if you want to go read about it, he's a modern expert on, he's really done a ton of things to kind of get this in the right perspective and in the right current modern medical world. So while leprosy's still with us, they and you know, if you lose feeling in your fingers, you lose feeling in your fingers, but they can stop it from progressing on to other bad things. You might have to get some instruction in how to live so that you don't rub the skin off your fingers, but it's not what it today what it was then. So going back to our passage, so, and a leper came to Jesus. When a leper comes to Jesus, and we believe he's of the unclean sign, because his comment is, you can make me clean. So when this person comes to Jesus, this is not a person who's got some mild malady. It's a huge issue for the person, for people that might become infected. It's a huge issue to be close to one of these people. This is a significant moment anytime a leper comes into somebody's life in any way, shape, or form. And here's a person that came to Jesus. Now, we just read that everywhere he went, people were congregating around him in order to be healed. So he probably had to go through, this isn't stated here, but he probably had to go through a crowd. And you can kind of imagine the scene here. I mean, when I worked at Wolf Creek, there was a period of time when we would go out on a specific kind of a safety walk down where what you were doing was going up and checking on people, seeing if they were following the rules. And it reminded me of when I fished in Canada in some clear lakes. When you drive your boat up, the fish would start going like this. They'd just part. And if you were lucky, they'd come back to your lure on the other side of the boat. But it was that way walking around the plant. You'd walk up and people would all of a sudden be done with their work and leave. It just was amazing how people just disappeared quickly. We didn't quite start it with the right culture, did a much better job in a later iteration of that. But I can just see that same thing happening here. From a distance, the crowd starting to make a hole around this guy. And even wondering after he went by if they wanted to step where he had stepped. Can you imagine that? It wouldn't be a very big stretch, would it? And so this man comes up to Jesus, beseeching him, so inquiring of him, calling out to him, falling on his knees, and says, well, let's talk about that a little bit, because let's go over to Luke 5:12 first. Another account of this same event. This event occurs both in Matthew and Luke, and we're going to pull a couple verses out of both of them. We'll start with Luke 5:12.
While he was in one of the cities, there came a man full of leprosy. And when he saw Jesus, he fell on his face and begged him, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean.
Okay. And if we looked over at Matthew 8:2, we don't have to read it. It would say, excuse me, he bowed down. So we're getting a lot of words here. If you look at Mark and Matthew and Luke, here's a man coming, and he addressed him as Lord, which is a good sign. He's addressing him as God or the Son of God or whatever. He bows down. He's on his knees, on his face, different kinds of words there. But he clearly has humbled himself in front of Jesus. And we could say, you know, these are really, really good signs. So in Mark it says, falling on his knees before him and saying to Jesus, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Now that's an interesting statement. It might give us a little bit of a hint as to what he might be thinking. When he says to Jesus, if you are willing, you can make me clean. There are several things we can glean out of that if you're willing, you can statement. What are some things that you might see there?
He assumes there's authority.
He acknowledges Jesus' sovereignty over the physical world. That's a good thing. Okay, what else?
He's humbling himself. Mm-hmm. He's not assuming Jesus is going to heal him.
He's not. He says, if you were willing. Why might Jesus not be willing to cleanse him, to heal him?
Well, he's basically, Jesus is countering the whole religious establishment right here. He's taking authority away from them because they've set up a system and they've said, these are the rules you live by, and he's rejecting those rules and saying, hey, this guy can override your rules.
Well, that's true.
I don't know if it's still that next day or not, but he may have just spent the whole night before healing people for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, Jesus could be tired. Yeah. Don't really want to fool with it right now.
Or the man thought he had leprosy because of his sin.
And that's probably a good thing to at least consider. Why is he a leper? Is this a result of some judgment from God? And if that's the case, God might not choose to relieve him of his judgment. Now, I'm not saying that's what's occurring here, but that's certainly not too far out of the realm of possibility that he might be saying, hey, if you're willing, you know, this is a terrible disease. It's almost got to be seen as some form of a curse. Well, we know it's the curse from Adam, at least. You know, so if you're willing, you can heal me, might have some of that in there. But he acknowledged Jesus' sovereignty over that. He goes to Jesus, says, if you're willing, it can happen. And then down in as we keep going, in verse 41, it says, Jesus is moved with compassion. So this did not make a small impact on Jesus' thoughts about this man that's in front of him. Jesus is compassionate. He can see the pain and the hurt and has feelings of kindness toward this man as a result of recognizing what he's going through. And so what did Jesus do there in the last half of that verse?
He touched him.
And that could set off, and it doesn't seem to in what's recorded, but that would have a tendency to set off. If they'd had a priest there, we'd had a battle royale just now starting, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
But there wasn't a priest there, apparently. But Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him. How do you suppose that related to the person with leprosy? Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things he's deprived of. You know, there are things in life that go along that you may not have as a part of your life, and you go, I don't really care. Until somebody says, you can't have that. And then it's kind of like, well, why not? And you start thinking this through, and it's kind of like, well, but I would like to have that. I mean, doesn't that create a void there that you just go, ah. Now, some things you don't care. I mean, somebody says to me, you can't have a horse, I'm going to go, you're right, I don't want one. I grew up around horses, they're fine, a lot of people enjoy them, but they're not for me. So, but there are things like, you know, and so if you get that social piece just withdrawn, a piece of that is touch, boy, that's a part of being really compassionate, isn't it? Another thing that happens, if you were to look at it from the Jewish perspective of that era, Jesus is now more identified with the lepers, the unclean people, than the clean ones, because now he's unclean in the eyes of the Jewish leadership. So is Jesus really unclean now?
No.
That's an interesting question to bring up because of Jesus' deity. If God somehow could, and he can't, have some tinge of sin attached to him, would he be unclean? Well, yeah, but God, by definition, is righteous, is holy, and sin can't attach itself to God, and so you can't make God unclean. And yet God, from his righteous perspective, has reached out to the human race, his creation, descendants of Adam and Eve, and touched them with the person of Christ. When Christ, as God himself, came in contact with these sinful beings and lived with these sinful people, what point in time or activity could Jesus ever be unclean? He can't. He's the definition of righteousness, the definition of holiness. He might be unclean in the eyes of these priests, but he's not the typical man walking around this world that can be made unclean by touching a leper. So Jesus didn't become unclean here in the real sense. If you want to go back and look at what happened in the book of Leviticus, you know, now you've got some questions to talk about. But Jesus is transcendent with regard to becoming ever unclean. And I think that's an important thing to say right here. But he stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, I am willing, be cleansed. And then Mark uses his overly used word in some sense, but it makes it very clear. Immediately, the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. These are words that are different from anything else that you will see with regard to leprosy outside of when Jesus is doing it. You don't have leprosy leave, you stop it, right? But his leprosy left him. And so we see this healing occur, and I want to talk for just a minute. Yes.
This is, I'm sure, just conjecture on my part, but can you, just from reading this, there are times that actually send chills in my spine. I'm just talking about English. But can you imagine how this man felt when Jesus touched him and the leprosy left? It brings some real, different meaning to me when I read this.
Well, there's some evidence here of what you're talking about, and in just a moment or two, we're going to get to that, because it that is maybe not how he felt, but the magnitude of what was done here is actually expounded on just a little bit in a following verse.
I also thought of the song Bill Gaither wrote, He Touched Me. I'm thinking, I'm surprised this guy didn't write it. But anyway.
Yeah, well, and judging by some of his actions, he came close. But when we think about healing, what limited Jesus doing healing was... Did he only heal people that had adequate faith?
No.
Did he only heal believers?
No.
Says he healed them all in the verses that we looked at in the previous healing. So Jesus, at this point, really, truly, his message isn't out there yet very much. Now, it is in the southern part of the region, but up here in Galilee, he's just getting going. And the message isn't out there a whole lot. And when he heals these people, it isn't because of their faith that they were healed. It was just because it was Jesus' will to heal them. And he healed everybody that came around here in this first part of Mark that we've read about in this Capernaum and the area surrounding Capernaum. So Jesus is doing that healing. Luke 4:40, last time we read that, said he healed everybody. And verse 42, immediately the leprosy left. Then we get down to verse 43. So the leprosy's gone. And he, who's the he here, Jesus, sternly warned him. Now, I got to tell you this, and I kind of snickered a little and said, oh, you didn't, that's not a very good way of talking about it. But it's literally what is in the base word is, it really says, Jesus snorted to him a warning. Now, we think of snorting as something, a lot of different things. In the vernacular of the day, that simply showed it was as stern as you could make it. Jesus says, now look, or something like that. and see that you so don't tell anyone about this. So this man is given, you know, he comes to Jesus, oh Lord, if you will, heal me. Looks really good, worshipful to Jesus. And Jesus said, now look, don't tell anybody, but instead, but, go and show yourself to the priests and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded. If you were to go back over and read Leviticus 13 and 14, Jesus is saying, go through that whole rigmarole. And we're going to talk in a minute about what's in that rigmarole, because it's amazing what he would have had to do.
Yep.
And do this as a testimony to them. And who's the them? The priests. Now we're going to pull all that together. But first, let's just see what the guy did. Okay, so he went out. So he called Jesus Lord. He bowed down and worshipped him. Did he obey him?
Nope.
But he went out and began to proclaim it freely and to spread the news around to such an extent that Jesus could no longer publicly enter a city, but stayed out of unpopulated areas, and they were coming in from everywhere. We'll talk about those words. But this guy went out and told everybody he could see. Now, I'm not wanting to have this next discussion to justify this man's disobedience, but I think we need to recognize before we look down our nose too hard at him how strong the temptation was. We don't know how long he was a leper, but he was covered with leprosy. It takes a little while for the disease to progress that far. He'd been ostracized. He hadn't had touch. He'd been an outcast. The only thing he could wear was tattered clothes. He couldn't sleep in the city. He had to sleep outside the city by himself. All those kinds of things. Here's this man that's just driven away from society and from social interaction to the max. He's an unclean outcast. And when the leprosy left him, it apparently was a very complete healing. Why? Jesus told him to go to the priests, right?
Yeah.
Where are the priests?
Jerusalem.
Where's Jerusalem from Capernaum?
About 80 miles.
Yeah, 70 is what I came up with, but 70 to 80 miles, somewhere in there. Jesus said, don't tell anybody, but right now, go walk 70 miles. Now, if he was a... if Jesus had just halted the disease, that was an unreasonable request. But Jesus said, you're going to start a 70-mile trek. Now, go to the priest. Don't tell anybody, but go down there and go through what you need to go through to be considered clean. And so his healing was pretty extraordinary. And if you had been living, pick your disease, pick the one you dread the most for a decade, fighting it, losing, and somebody came along and instantly you felt like you did before you got the disease, who are you not going to tell? I mean, I'm not saying Jesus was unreasonable in his request, but this was no small thing that Jesus asked him to do. Don't tell anybody. Anybody? Can I tell my estranged family? You know, can I go home and hug my mom? No. Go to the priest. So I'm not trying to make it okay that he didn't do what Jesus said, but that was a pretty big deal.
He's preaching in the synagogues. Isn't there a priest in the synagogue?
Well, no. Rabbi. Synagogue would have had a rabbi, or they would have actually had a president of the synagogue would be the term we would use, and then rabbis would come in. He's more like a business manager for the synagogue, keeps kind of order and keeps the facilities going, and then rabbis would come and teach. But there's nothing here that says he was in a synagogue when this happened. He might have been out in the streets of town or whatever.
But if you could compare the guys sort of to us, because we are in a church where you preach a sovereign God and we can sing our God is an awesome God all day, but we really still don't have a concept.
This guy
would have been used to a whole different system and probably had no idea.
Oh, I don't think there's much question that, you know, there are not people, very many, maybe the ones he's called as apostles that are truly born again yet. I mean, it's just early on. But with regard to, I think if we wanted to compare ourselves with regard to faith and understanding, we would be like the people praying for Peter's release. And when he comes to the door, we go, we're busy praying for you. Go away. You know, that's, I mean, we pray, and I'm not trying to belittle our faith, but we do see wonderful things happen, and we rejoice over those. But a lot of times we kind of have this small box that we look at as the potential things that might happen. Yes, sir.
Wouldn't that have caused quite the stir back at the...
Well, there was a group of people that he wasn't going to have to tell. Now, you got to remember, though, Jesus is dealing with a leper. How far away did those people try to get?
150 feet.
I mean, they were probably far enough back. If Jesus wanted to, he could communicate with this guy without them, but they're going to see this healed man.
No, I mean, wouldn't that have caused quite the, when he went to the priest?
If
he's registered as a leper or whatever, and he comes back completely clean.
It did happen. I mean, there were provisions. It wasn't like once they're a leper, they'll never unbe a leper. I mean, God gave the provisions for how to consider them clean again.
Okay.
So I don't know how often it occurred. I'm going to kind of take you through those here in a minute. Bill, I think you had something to say.
Well, it had more to do with the synagogue thing. I'm just curious, where did they do their sacrifices locally if they didn't have a priest?
They didn't. I mean, it varies. Did they occasionally build altars when they were in captivity? Did they build altars and do sacrifices? I believe they did. But generally, everybody trekked down to Jerusalem to do their sacrifices. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a real, real big generalization. But they would if they could. Absolutely. They'd go ahead and make that trip. All right. So, he didn't follow orders. You could call that a sin if you want to it. So, here's what you had to do when you went to the priest. You went in to say, I think I'm deserve to be called clean. You're going to be examined. And then you're going to sacrifice two birds. Well, not sacrifice two birds. You're going to have two birds. You kill one of them over running water. Okay? It's right out of Ezekiel, right out of
Leviticus.
And in addition, you have some cedar and some scarlet and some hyssop together there. You take those, mix them together in the blood of the and the water mixed from the sacrifice bird, you put that on the live bird and let the live bird go. Now, if you ask me why, I would say, because God said so. I don't have much more to add to that. And then the man, now he's done all this little bit, the man washes himself and his clothes and shaves himself. And then he waits 7 days. And then he shaves again, all of his hair, including the eyebrows. He's then again examined, and he sacrifices two male lambs, and they have to be spotless, which I think goes without saying in sacrifices, but it's written there. One ewe lamb, 3/10 of a measure of fine flour with oil. And then if he's still considered clean by the priests in that examination, they touch him on the tip of the right ear, the right thumb, and the right big toe with a blood oil mix from the sacrifice. And then he is examined again and still clean. He's given a certificate saying you're clean. So he's going to start an 8-day, roughly minimum 8-day process in order to become considered clean.
So now you've got a leper. He's been cast out from society, has no job, nothing. Where does he come up with all these sacrificial animals?
Probably relatives.
Oh, okay. I can see and this is going to be a little bit of a facetious comment, but I can see the priests look at this guy going, he is clean. He can owe us a bunch. We'll give him to him on credit because they operated, but at the time of Jesus, that sacrifice center was a profit center.
Yeah.
And I can see them figuring some way to, sort of like the people that have no credit, no job, and no nothing, they can still go buy a car, but the interest rate they're going to pay is going to be way up there.
Well, later in Leviticus 14, it does give a provision for a poor man.
Okay, all right. I didn't
but
read all that. So.
Still, it's take one male lamb, and then there's a 1/10 of an ephah of flour, so there's still... and 2 turtle doves that are within his means is what it says.
Yeah, so he's still going to have some things to go acquire. Now, Jesus said, he stated it, what was his purpose in sending him to the priests?
Testimony
to the priests. So when the priests get all done, they're in a tight spot. If he had done what Jesus asked, and we don't know that he didn't still go down there eventually. We don't know what happened after this moment. But it put the priests in a tough spot. What is the relationship between Jesus and the priests at this point?
They are very, very suspicious of this guy.
They're more than suspicious. They're out for blood. Why? He's already cleansed the temple once. Temple cleansing. What's that?
Has he healed the blind man, the blind from birth man yet?
Yes.
Okay.
Those things have occurred. So he's already at war with the priests. And so he's basically sitting him down there and saying, the priests are going to have to certify my miracle. And I want you to do this as a testimony to them. So he had them over a barrel. When this guy showed up, what they had to do was prescribed. They couldn't just deny it. They were going to be stuck with it. And Jesus, of course, healed him. So is he going to pass? Yes, he's going to pass. And they're going to have to certify a miracle of Jesus. And that's going to be, they're either going to have to decide, and it could have been, I mean, we could say, well, it's going to bring condemnation on the priest, and it could. It could also convince a priest, hey, you know what? This guy has to be for real. So we don't know what Jesus' ultimate intention was, but here's a testimony that's going to get in front of a priest or priests and show them that I am who I say I am and that I have power over this world and can even cure leprosy. So here's the result of all this. The man goes out and talks a lot. It was going to be hard to keep this contained, wasn't it? But he goes out and it talks a lot, and Jesus can no longer even get into a city. As a matter of fact, the cities, if you will, are coming out to him. What does it say there at the end of the verse, end of the chapter? He couldn't publicly enter a city, but he stayed out in unpopulated areas or the desert, and they were coming to him from everywhere. So Jesus is getting this big following going now. And they're so massive, he can't really get into the towns without creating such a commotion. It says publicly enter the town, so he could privately enter, and we're going to see a result of one of those next week. So I do think we need to talk about this whole thing a little bit, because it's easy to think of this leper and go, what an unclean, ugly situation to be in life, and how bold of Jesus to have compassion on him and to touch him and to get involved in that life, but how are you any different than the leper? I mean, when we stop and look at this, we get these physical examples of people. I mean, this is, you could make a movie that wouldn't be any worse of a characterization, right? The Walking Dead, I mean, that's really close to what this guy is. He's walking death. He looks bad, probably. Says he was fully leprous, according to Luke. Yeah, Luke. And so, I mean, this is a visibly, to your senses, it's a big deal. We tend to get sometimes failing to recognize that it may not be visible on us, but with our sin, we're as ugly and as much walking death as a leper is. And so when Jesus reached out to us, it was not any bigger stretch at all for him to reach out to you through his compassionate gift on the cross for you. That wasn't any bigger of a step for that leper than it would be for you and me and anybody else. You were going to say something.
I just said in the Old Testament you have cases like Rahab the harlot and Mary Magdalene, and you know, cases where people had these just terrible lifestyles and stuff, and basically they were pulled out of sin by God.
Yeah, and their lifestyle was more visible than yours or mine.
Or even today, a lot of times attitude might have about somebody, you know, they're a druggie prostitute on the street, we don't want to have anything to do with them, so it's,
yeah. Same kind of a deal, yeah. That's exactly right. One of the differences is we are ambassadors to those people on behalf of Christ, yeah. And so we ought to be filled with compassion, we ought to be reaching out and touching when we have those opportunities as well. And many of the people that are in those kinds of situations are starved for the kind of friendly interaction that we take for granted. So, any other questions or comments? Well, that's the end of what I have today. Let me close with a word of prayer. Lord, you are a very compassionate Savior. You reached out to me and all of the sin that I have brought with me, and you have cleansed me and healed me, and I thank you for that. And I thank you for the many within the sound of my voice that you have reached out to as well. Lord, teach us to be good ambassadors of this message of compassion that you've got for those who are hurting, may be cast aside, may feel completely unlovable and worthless. Lord, let us be good at showing them that you have made a sacrifice that can cover their sins. Lord, call them with your Holy Spirit to us that we might have those opportunities. And then, Lord, let us proceed with confidence in bringing the love of Christ to them. Thank you for your great love for us, for your provision for us. And we ask you now to bless the rest of this day. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.